Why would our jazz critic Kevin Whitehead leave the capital of the jazz world, New York, to spend a couple of years in Holland writing a book about Dutch jazz? Well, to find out more about music like this. That's music by Willem Breuker, a track we've often played on Fresh Air. He's one of the Dutch composers Kevin writes about in his new book, New Dutch Swing. Kevin's book explores how a country so far removed from the birthplace and center of jazz has managed to produce music that is distinct, funny, polished, innovative, swinging, and bluesy. I asked Kevin to tell us more about the book and why he wrote it.
I thought it was time that an American took a look at a thriving foreign jazz scene. As much as Americans talk about jazz has a great cultural export, they don't always pay so much attention to what happens to it after it leaves the United States and begins to mix with musics elsewhere and begins to live its own life a little bit. Another reason is that from living in New York for several years, every day I was having a discussion with somebody about whether a certain piece of music was jazz or not. And I began to notice more and more that that had become a substitute for discussion rather than a starting point for discussion. And Dutch music was an opportunity to take a look at what happens to jazz when it freely mixes with other kinds of music, because the leading musicians there simply don't worry about whether something is jazz or not. They just take whatever they want and use it as they will.
Why don't we hear some music that I think will illustrate some of your points here. Why don't we hear something that you've brought with you by Willem Breuker, or Broker, as I think he's better known in Holland. Tell us what you hear in this piece that says something about what happened to jazz when it hit Holland and how it's been interpreted there.
I should mention I wanted to play something by Willem Broeker because he's the best known of the Dutch musicians in the States. He's done about a dozen tours in North America. One of the things that's really interesting about his music to me is that there is a real absence of traditional jazz harmony in his writing. In fact, the way the kind of he takes these little short melodic sections for horns and keeps repeating and repeating them has a lot to do with the kind of barrel organ music that you hear on the street in Amsterdam, what basically would sound like circus calliope music to an American. It's one example of how Dutch music draws on homegrown roots. This is some music he wrote for a Bertolt Brecht play in 1973.
That's Willem Breuker, one of the musicians written about in Kevin Whitehead's new book, New Dutch Swing. Kevin, I think that piece gets to one of the things I like a lot about some of the Dutch musicians I've heard, which is the sense of wit, the sense of kind of fun in the music.
For sure. The Dutch don't take improvised music so very seriously. I think in part that's a reaction to the homegrown improvising styles that were growing up in Germany and England around the same time as in Holland, where the music was much more serious and musicians were either supposed to play as fiercely as possible in the German model or as cooperatively with one another as possible in the English model, and the Dutch sort of rejected both of those. They always liked to swing, which was considered unfashionable in some circles when the European jazz movement started taking off in the 60s. And a lot of the Dutch composers have a nice sense of melody also.
I like your point about how you wanted to know what happens to this great export jazz when it hits other places. So what are some of the things that you think happened to jazz in Holland that maybe give it a different sound?
Part of it is that although the Dutch musicians are very knowledgeable about trends in American jazz, some of the musicians who are very influential in Holland are not necessarily the same ones who are influential in America. Thelonious Monk was a great influence in Holland long before his music became fashionable here. The late pianist Herbie Nichols has always been a really important composer in Holland. His pieces have been played a lot. Also, the influence of the minimalism, particularly of Terry Riley, that came into the music in the 1960s. And also maybe an absurdist strain that comes a little bit from Misha Mengelberg's interest in the music of John Cage. Mengelberg is known to some as a jazz piano player and jazz composer, but he also has a career as a classical composer in Holland. He's a conservatory-trained composer. Went to the conservatory with Louis Andriessen, who I guess is the best-known Dutch composer in the States.
The subtitle of your book, New Dutch Swing, is Jazz Plus Classical Music Plus Absurdism Equals New Dutch Swing. And do you think that classical music and jazz came together in Holland in a different way than they have in the United States?
I think there was less pressure to keep the music separate in Holland. And some people in America believe that because jazz is a precious cultural commodity, it should be kept separate from other kinds of music. That never seemed like a very sensible idea to me, for one thing, because jazz itself is an amalgam of several other styles. If the people who put together jazz had honored that principle, then jazz would never have existed. Because the Dutch don't see jazz as their own music, but simply as a style that's worth pilfering from with respect, they're always free to mix it with other things.
Let me get to the other part of the equation in your subtitle, and that is absurdism. Why do you think the sense of absurdism, of Dadaist theater, enters Holland so Dutch jazz so strongly?
Well, first of all, the Amsterdam improvising scene, which is really what I've written about in the book, is very small, so certain figures can have a large amount of influence. Misha Mengelberg, for me, is really the intellectual godfather of the Dutch scene. And he was someone who just always, you know, he's a funny man. He has a good sense of humor. And he heard Stravinsky from when he was a small boy, and he heard Monk from when he was a teenager, and he always heard this sort of sense of fun in their music. But one thing Stravinsky and Monk have in common is the use of deliberate mistakes, I guess I would call them, things that seem to be mistakes that are deliberately written into the music. Stravinsky would be doing things where when he would repeat a riff, he'd have it start on a different beat of the bar as if a musician had gotten lost. Monk used to play a lot of chords that relied on adjacent keys on the piano, which would give some people the idea that that he was making a mistake, that he was hitting a key that he didn't mean to be making. Because Mengelberg has such a good ear, and also because he comes from a musical family, his father is a composer and his great uncle was a conductor, he could always hear in a musical way what was going on in these kinds of music. So when he heard Monk, he immediately didn't hear it as someone who sounded like he was making mistakes, but someone who had a particular kind of harmonic language that could be developed.
Well, you've brought a Misha Mengelberg composition with you. Would you like to play it for us?
Yeah. It's a piece from 1990 for his ICP orchestra. That's the Instant Composers Pool Orchestra. The piece is called Bospadje Konijnenhol, which is Dutch for Forest Path Rabbit Hole.
And tell us why you chose to play this for us.
It's got a really nice sense of melody. Like the Willembrugger piece, it has Han Bennink on drums, who's a terrific drummer. It has a very nice, very strange tenor saxophone solo by a guy named Ab Bars, whose idol on the tenor saxophone is the Chicago saxophonist Von Freeman. Another example of a Dutch musician kind of latching onto someone who doesn't necessarily get so much attention in the States.
Let's hear it. That's music by Misha Mengelberg, one of the records Kevin Whitehead has brought with him, and one of the records discussed in Kevin's new book, New Dutch Swing. I think that's a great illustration of how certain avant-gardisms, like, you know, honking, which in certain music might be interpreted as really angry, is used as to real frolicking effect in some of the Dutch jazz. I mean, certainly American composers have done that too, but I think it is one of the trademarks of a lot of the Dutch jazz.
I think that's probably true. Another reason I like that piece is that it doesn't try to emulate any American models. You know, it's not trying to swing in any kind of conventional sense, although it certainly does have that kind of rhythmic buoyancy that I associate with swinging. It's sort of typical of the Dutch penchant for rethinking the kind of values that they got from American jazz, kind of remaking things in their own terms.
As you point out in your book, some people dismiss European jazz as one more ripoff of African-American culture, and I'm wondering what your response to that is.
I always thought that idea was completely backwards. It always seemed to me that it was a triumph of African-American culture, because here's this African-American art form that people all around the world are drawn to and want to play, you know? To me, that's like, could there be any higher compliment to African-American music than that? It's not like any jazz that's being made in Holland or Australia or Austria or anywhere else takes anything away from the music of Duke Ellington or Charlie Parker or anybody else you want to put on that list.
You say, too, that if the Dutch teach us anything, it's that jazz conservatories can relax. They needn't worry about the harmful effects of crossbreeding jazz and other kinds of music. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Well, in Holland, as in the States, there is now a generation of conservatory-bred jazz musicians. And some of them are becoming known a little bit in the United States. The guitarist Jesse Van Ruler won the Thelonious Monk competition a few years ago. The pianist Michiel Borslap won a BMI composition prize. These musicians are basically trying to play straight-ahead jazz music. Well, after, you know, 35 years of the innovations of the likes of Misha Mengelberg and Han Bennink and Willem Broeker, if there are all these Dutch people who still want to play straight jazz, then I guess this is proof that jazz is more resilient than some people think.
My guest is our jazz critic, Kevin Whitehead. He's written a new book called New Dutch Swing. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with our jazz critic, Kevin Whitehead. We're talking about his new book, New Dutch Swing. After your book was finished, you returned to the States, returned to your home in New York, got rid of your apartment, and sold a lot of your record collection, which shocked me when I heard you were doing that. It's something that I know. I know several people with large collections who have toyed with the idea of selling part or all of it. Only one, in addition to you, that I know of has actually followed through on it. I'm wondering what made you kind of cross the line.
I think the moment I decided to sell off a bunch of my record collection was the moment that the last time I moved in New York, when I moved to Brooklyn, and had 150 cartons of records or something like that. And it was just ridiculous. You know, a lot of these records I hadn't heard in 20 years anyway. At this point, I think I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to listen to again and what I didn't. I should mention I'm now down to my skeleton record collection. I now have like 35 cartons of LPs and CDs, something like that. Also, from living in America where I had lots and lots of stuff to going to Holland where I didn't have very much stuff at all, it made me realize that not having so much stuff is a better way. It makes you more mobile. I have a little bit of the aimless drifter in me, I think. And it's just easier to do that if you're not dragging all this stuff through the world with you.
Well, you're doing a little bit of drifting now. You're not sure if you're going to live in New York or someplace else, right?
I'm sure I'm not going to live in New York. I would still like to spend 2-3 months a year in Holland, for sure. I want to live in the United States the rest of the time, but I don't really know where I want to live at this point.
I know you've had the chance to hear some concerts since being back in the States, and some of them in New York. I'm wondering if you feel that the New York jazz scene has changed at all since you left, or whether you're hearing things in a different way than you did before?
I'd say it on the basis of the few concerts that I've been since I've been back, it hasn't changed as much as I would have hoped, considering I'd been gone almost 3 years. Jazz seems to be in a very slow period now. I notice more and more critics are mentioning this in private conversations, that a lot of the things that are happening in the music don't really engage them so much anymore. I think the fact that jazz is so backward-oriented now sort of makes it impossible to advance in a certain way.
You mean emphasizing the tradition, drawing on the roots,
If one thing living in Holland has taught me is that there's far too much attention paid to the tradition in the States. The jazz tradition will take care of itself because the values that jazz embodies are always going to be there in the music. And if if something isn't a good value, it will drop away, but that's okay. Every art form evolves. That's just what happens. What always attracted me to jazz was the innovative strain and people thinking on their feet. And I think in recent years, it has been suggested that this is not, in fact, what jazz was always about. That jazz was always about, you know, swinging rhythm, and an elegant instrumental statement. Those things are great, but they're not all of it. And I think jazz is kind of missing that exploratory sense a lot these days.
Well, Kevin, why don't you leave us with some more music from Holland?
Terry, I brought this device with me today that maybe I could play. It's called a crackle box. This is typical of a certain kind of Dutch lack of respect for certain traditions. It's a portable electronic music instrument about the size of a transistor radio, which was invented by a guy named Michel Weisswies in the mid-70s. It was basically designed to be a portable, unprogrammable synthesizer. It's an unstable oscillator, and part of the circuitry is exposed on the front of the box, so when you touch some pads on the front of the box, you actually enter into the circuit yourself and become what Weisswies calls the thinking part of the machine. You can get vibrato on it, which is quite nice. If I could get a note. One nice thing about the crackle box is it's very hard to repeat something that you do once.
How has it been used in Dutch jazz?
It was used sort of as a kind of an anti-jazz ray gun, I guess you would say. It was if you wanted another layer of sort of built-in musical chaos, it was a nice little device to have.
Another thing I really enjoy about a lot of the Dutch jazz that you write about in your book is that it's fun and it doesn't feel like it needs to intellectualize about it or be apologetic about it. I mean, there is a group, not everyone in the States, but there is a group of people who feel that fun equals shallow, and for music to be serious and important, it can't be fun.
Yeah, well, then they'd have to throw out an awful lot of Sonny Rollins records from the late 50s, early 60s, if they really believe that. Obviously, I don't believe that that's true, that there's nothing... There's nothing incompatible between having some fun and being serious. You know, you can to display some levity when you're making music is not a sign of disrespect. It's a sign that music is good for that also. You know, why shouldn't music be good for all these emotions that we feel?
Since you were talking about the influence of Thelonious Monk on many of the Dutch jazz musicians, I thought maybe we could close with something that shows that Monk influence. Maybe you can choose something like that for us.
Yeah, I have a piece here by the pianist and composer Huus Jansen. It's called I Mean, which I assume is a pun on the Monk title, I Mean You. And it's sort of a deliberate pastiche of monkish piano techniques.
And it's very, very entertaining.
Glad you think so. Me too.
Thank you, Kevin. Kevin Whitehead is Fresh Air's jazz critic and author of the new book, New Dutch Swing.